You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It is Friday. Thank goodness. Time for our reporter roundtable where we get you up to date on all the news that made headlines this week. Joining us live in studio today, Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Statesman, Madeline Beck with the Mountain West News Bureau, and Bill Manny with Idaho Public Television. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Well, you know what? It just wouldn't be the roundtable if we didn't talk about the upcoming election. So let's just dig right in. So earlier this week, last Friday, campaign finance reports were due and came out. Our James Dawson dug into some numbers when that was released, and he found that Mayor Beter had hired his chief lobbyist while she was still with the city and using some paid vacation leave, which seemed to raise some ethical questions. And so this morning, our George Prentice talked with the mayor, and we want to play his response.
She resigned from the city. She had some vacation coming to her, which is owed to her, and asked the city, and she did everything right, asked the city what to do, and she did everything right. You could take it in a lump sum or you can dole it out over time, but she'd left the city, she'd resigned. We wanted it clean that way, and really that's it. It's a really common occurrence, and you want to have that break between the two. But
was it possibly an oversight?
The city will look in and comment, but if it was an oversight, it was an oversight on the advice she was given. Like I said, she did everything right. We thought about a leave. We thought that wouldn't be right. You know, make sure she resigns. You know, it's really just how to treat a benefit that she has coming to her. And that's, they said, you can do it this way. And that's what she did.
But
I think there won't be a problem.
In a campaign, there is a hyper-focus on everything.
Well, it seems to be hyper-focused on my campaign and not as much focus on others. There are seven of us in here. But again, I don't think there's news at all there. She did everything right, and off we go.
So this seems to be maybe an HR issue where someone gets a piece of advice, goes to HR, and then, you know, being told, well, sure, you can either take the lump sum or you can take the vacation payout. This happens, but this has gotten a lot more play. And why do you think that is?
Well, I think you just have to be more careful with public money. You know, it's perhaps all above board, but again, when you're talking about, doing things the right way, and you don't want any sort of appearance of a conflict or any appearance of wrongdoing, you just have to do it the right way. And you just have to look out. I think about Chris Allgood, who was the police chief in the city of Caldwell. This was a couple of years ago, and he ran for city council. And there's a state law that says you can't be he was still collecting retirement. You had to have a cooling off period, 90 days, before you could be a city employee again or under a state if you're receiving pension. And so, you know, again, there's perhaps legal and, above board. But I think, you know, particularly when you're talking about public money and elections, you just have to make sure that you're doing things the right way. Either take that lump sum and then go on the payroll of the campaign, or wait until that vacation time is paid up to go on the election, the campaign.
It seems to me there's two things going on here. One is this question of this kind of interim period when she still had city benefits and still had vacation time, and then this notion of having staffers who work on campaigns. And the truth is that's the reality of modern politics. You have staffers moving from paid staff to campaign and vice versa all the time. In Congress, this is common. In fact, in Congress, it's so common they have rules about when you can and can't make phone calls on behalf of your boss's campaign. So I think as these campaigns get more and more professional over time, this is a bigger deal. You're going to have more paid staff. We're going to be confronting these kind of issues now. Now, the question about, you know, should she have been getting the, you know, the campaign payment while she was still on the city payroll, that's a separate question. But I think the bigger issue is this is going to be something we're going to be confronting more often.
Mm-hmm. And Madeline, I mean, this was something that you were following as well when this was going on, and part of it maybe was just the response to it initially.
Right. No, absolutely. And so one of the things that the spokesperson Mike Journey had originally said was, you know, this, she can do what she wants on her vacation. This doesn't violate any policy. And then, so James Dawson, our reporter, went and picked up the handbook, and then he found a ordinance that essentially says you outside of City Hall, you can't work for the same boss you work for inside of City Hall doing separate business. So we took that to Journey and asked about that and said, well, isn't this a violation? And he said, no, we don't believe it is because we don't believe being a public official, as the mayor is, he shouldn't be called an employee of the city. And so it got into this nitpicking thing. And see, that opens up a whole other door of, if the mayor isn't technically an employee of the city, doesn't he have to adhere to any of the policies? It opened up this huge other thing. And so this morning, obviously, we've heard from Mayor Beter and his exact response and being like, you know, we believe she did everything right. She may have been misled by some advice from HR, but that sort of thing. That's one way to put it. But by saying, you know, the mayor is not an employee of the city, and in opening up this bigger box of questions, I don't know, that response may have driven some more controversy than they might have wanted it to.
Because it seems in the end that, I mean, you may have just gotten some advice from your human resources department that maybe wasn't accurate. I think everyone can talk about a time where something like that has happened. And it's all, you know, frankly, above board, but it is maybe the handling of the situation that sometimes comes into question.
You know, we've all left jobs where you had a little bit of vacation time or some other things coming to you. So I think everybody can kind of see themselves in this situation. I was struck by listening to Mayor Beter's answer to George, is that, you know, he feels like he's under hyper scrutiny. And I think, you know, my response was, you know, deal with it. You are the incumbent, right? This is really going to be a referendum on his 16 years as mayor, and he should not be surprised that, you know, people are basically, you know, measuring him. And this is going to be, do you want to go with somebody else, or do you want to go with the status quo? So I was surprised that he seemed to be surprised by that.
So I want to continue talking about election season, but I want to switch it to the city of Meridian, because this is more than just the great state of the city of Boise. There are other races going on, one of them being Meridian's race. And we should note with that race, I mean, there will be a new mayor and could potentially be a bigger race in some regards as to moving forward in that city. And Scott, you were looking at donations for the city of Meridian.
Yeah, our reporter Kate Tallarico looked at the campaign finance reports. And I don't want to sound like a hayseed here, but, you know, Robert Simonson.
Too late.
Too late. Whenever you start
well,
a sentence
now.
Like that. But Robert Simonson, who is the chief of staff for incumbent mayor Tammy DeVeard, who is not running for reelection, he raised $100,000 by himself. And this is through September 30th. So we still have more to come. Joe Palmer, a state legislator who's also running for mayor, he raised $62,000. And Little Roberts raised $21,000. So we're talking $200,000 in the city of Meridian mayor race, which I don't know if that's ever been the case, that much money has been raised. And it's a pretty competitive race. You know, obviously Simpson has raised the most money, and, you know, you could argue from a lot of the establishment businesses, Chamber of Commerce, fellow staffers in the city. But Joe Palmer has also received a lot of donations and is making this a competitive race. And Ann Little Roberts is very well known in Meridian, former president of the Meridian Chamber of Commerce. So that is, you know, Meridian is the second largest city in Idaho. It's growing faster than Boise. And so this is going to be a really key election, and it's really good to see competition. You know, we so often see these mayoral races without any challengers or without any candidates. So to have a competitive race, I think, is really refreshing.
What I find fascinating, too, about this is that it seems that so much of the focus has been on the Boise race, which, fair enough. However, as I said, they will have a new mayor in Meridian. And one can argue that, you know, what we have seen in Meridian over the last 15 years in particular, it is because of who was in charge.
Well, and I mean, not only has Mayor Tammy been there for
16, I think as long as Dave, she was, as Beter.
And she was also council president before that. And I think you could argue ran the city even when she was, you know, when she wasn't mayor. So not only are you having a new mayor, you are having this is the first time we're going to have a city not led by Tammy DeVere since the 1990s practically. And so it's huge. It's changed so dramatically in that time. And I go back to the point I made about the Boise mayoral race. This is big time now, right? You're seeing real money spent on this race because the stakes are higher. Just like you're seeing professional staff and this fighting over staffing in Boise, in Meridian, you've got real stakes involved and you've got real money involved.
Well, and I mean, I moved here almost 21 years ago, and I don't remember who the mayor of Meridian was before Tammy DeVere.
Well, she was council president in that time. And
right.
So that's why you don't remember who the mayor was.
And so I just find it fascinating that, I mean, the Statesman, you've been doing profiles, Scott, mm-hmm. on right. the Meridian mayors. But it is a race that it seems to kind of gotten overshadowed by the Boise race. But I think there could potentially be more implications.
Yeah, particularly when you're talking about growth, and growth is the biggest issue, you know. And I know that property taxes is coming up, and city budget spending is coming up, and I think that's really great to have those voices that are challenging the status quo and seeing how they're going to grow. And again, with Meridian being the fastest growing city in the country by some accounts, it's really a big deal where they're going to be over the next 4 years, over the next mayoral term.
Before we go to break, Madeline, I want to talk about ag economy, because the Mountain West doing better than the rest of the nation when it comes to agricultural economy.
So yeah, when you're looking at one of the story that I recently published was about specifically a lot of what you hear about the ag economy nationally right now is it's under a lot of strain because of the trade war with China. And that is true. The national ag economy is, but the difference with the Mountain West region is a lot of the products here either depend more on Canada and Mexico, or there is the challenge of the Mountain West products. There's just a lot more diversity. So when a couple of the products have been hit by trade war with China, some of the other ones aren't as dependent on that. And so you see this diversity that's kind of keeping the ag economy afloat. And in Idaho specifically, ag is the biggest single contributor to the state economy, something around 20%. So that's massive in a state. And for Idaho, its biggest ag sector is dairy. Now, dairy, as anyone who kind of listens to what's going on in ag news, has been doing terribly the last several years, mainly because of national overproduction. But this state and this region, they have larger dairies, so it's been able to weather some of those storms better. And this last year, some of that overproduction kind of shrank just enough that dairy is now just getting past the break-even point. People are starting to make money back in dairies. All of this is kind of converging in the Mountain West, kind of on an upward trend, when the rest of the nation largely is on a downward trend, with some pockets also doing well. But a couple years ago, hurricanes hitting, you know, the Southeast, mm-hmm. they took a really big hit. This last year, the Midwest, oof, corn and soybeans are their crops. Sure, they have some diversity there, but it's mainly corn and soybeans when you look at crops, and soybeans were the biggest and hardest hit by the trade war with China. Sure, farmers there are getting they're getting this federal bailout money, so that's propping up their bottom line. But a lot of them are afraid that, you know, the longer this trade war goes on, this markets that they've established with China over years and years and years are going to disappear as China finds their own farmers to grow it, finds more and more people in Brazil to grow soybeans for them. And Brazil has, and Brazil's actually had to buy from the United States to supplant China's need for them. So but the thing is, the longer this takes, the more other markets are going to spring up to replace the United States.
So maybe we should change the license plates to "it ain't just potatoes
anymore." Put a big cow on there.
Oh, yeah. I think the Dairymen's Association would be thrilled.
Yeah. We'll have to talk to lawmakers about that. We're going to take a quick break. This is the Reporter Roundtable on Idaho Matters. Our panel today, Bill Manny with Idaho Public Television, Madeline Beck with the Mountain West News Bureau, and Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Statesman. So, Bill, I want to talk a little bit about the latest with fighter jets and the fact that they could potentially get clearance to fly lower, in Idaho and Oregon and Nevada?
Well, there's a proposal, and it's going to be up for public hearings apparently. And I don't know anything more than what I've read, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's just that I think with the military proposing that they want to fly lower over our states, and with this notion that this separate issue about them wanting to fly missions right over our cities, I think there's a lot of people. In fact, some of the same people who were not happy with the F-35 being based in at the Boise Airport, wondering, you know, why are we going to be, you know, the subject of war games? And I want to hear those same answers too.
Oh, and that's what it comes down to, right?
Yeah.
What are some of the answers to that? Okay, so Madeline, explain this. Is there a company that wants to map the entire world with lasers?
Yes. I mean, yes. No,
okay.
So,
why?
Basically, this is out of the University of Colorado, but there's this thing that they're looking at called Earth Archive, which hopes to map the entire – it's a very big plan.
It's a lofty idea.
Map the entire world. Earth as it is today, using something called LIDAR. You guys might have heard of it when it comes to, they used it most recently in finding ancient Aztec ruins among the jungles. So they can send up planes, which send down these lasers that bounce down and bounce back up and basically make 3D, very precise 3D maps of exactly what everything looks like. And so what this basically, what the founder of Earth Archive, his name's Chris Fisher, really wants to do with it is he says, you know, if we're looking at archaeologists 100 years from now, they're really not going to know exactly what things looked like, especially as climate change is making it so that erosions at sea level are happening faster and faster, that the deforestation happening in Brazil with the Amazon rainforest, all that's happening really fast. And so he really wants the world to come together around this. And he is a self-described massive optimist, and there's been a lot of actually.
We need more of those.
and the thing is that the critiques of him are generally, you know, this is going to cost millions and billions of dollars to do this, even if you just do the sensitive areas. Trying to get permissions to fly planes with LIDAR over the Amazon. Yeah, I don't know. That sounds like a pretty, but he sees it as an opportunity to have more discussions of like how to get the global scientific community together. But I mean, one thing he also discusses is trying to save money for this himself when there are already activities in Idaho that are using LIDAR. University of Idaho has researchers trying to use it on drones to see how much snowpack is sticking in trees so we get a better look at how much water we're going to have over the year. Because we can measure the snowpack on the ground, but how much stuck in the trees? Like it's things like that. We're even looking at it to count trout in mountain streams and mountain lakes. The people are starting to use LIDAR. So it's a fascinating technology, but it's such disjointed uses. There's no really big cohesion that he's envisioning. He's trying to and he hopes to, but I don't know how feasible it actually might be.
You know, I had the same question about Google when it started, when it said,
"Oh right,
map
Google Map and Google Earth."
Yeah, right. You're never going to do that, and it's going to be too expensive. And now cannot live without it. And I mean, Google Earth, right?
Right.
Imagine being able to zoom in on your backyard. So I wouldn't underestimate this guy.
No, I like your viewpoint. And he
optimist.
Yeah, another optimist. No, I think he said that mapping the entire Amazon rainforest would cost somewhere in like he could do it in $17 to $19 million. And he's like, you know, Bezos has a yacht worth more than that. We could do it.
We'll
like,
just sell Bezos's yacht.
That's
exactly.
That's the little thing.
Why not, Scott? College of Idaho has an identity crisis right now. College of Western Idaho.
This is the community college. And it's really interesting because they're talking about their future building needs. And, you know, I've been covering this now for a couple months. And, you know, the College of Western Idaho, fastest growing community college in the country, they went out for a bond to build a new campus in Boise and build a new health sciences building. They went out to voters twice and it failed two times. And so they're at a point right now where they're saying, well, where do we go? What do we do? And they had a meeting on Tuesday. The trustees had a workshop to talk about how did we get to this point and talked about all the growth and all the steps along the way. And here we are. How are we going to go back to the voters and say we need more space? And it really evolved into a conversation about, well, what's our identity? You know, they talked about health sciences and, you know, they started talking about, well, the voters told us twice that this is not, you know, what they want. And so you could see that the conversation started turning to, well, do people see us as a provider of health services, education? You know, I have written before that I feel that the trustees should sell the land that they purchased in downtown, the west end of Boise, and consolidate all of their buildings in one campus in Nampa and be an economic driver for Canyon County all in one place. And Mark Dunham, who has been on the board since day one, since 2008, I think, he actually said, you know, is this something we should look at? Now, that may be the right answer. It might not be the right answer, but at least they're having those conversations. And they have a couple of new board members, Molly Lenti and Annie Hightower, on the board. MC Nyland has been on the board for a long time, and Mark Dunham has been on the board for a long time. Skip Smizer is recently to the board. So it's an interesting mix right now, and they're kind of, you know, as I wrote in my column this week, they're like a teenager who went through a growth spurt and doesn't know what they want to be when they grow up. And that was a hat tip to Mark Browning, the communications director, giving me that analogy.
Well, it's interesting, too, because I grew up in a town with a community college, mm-hmm. and it was a very traditional type of community college in the sense that a lot of kids that I went to high school with went to Centralia College for 2 years, and you get that associate's degree, and then it's a jumping off point for you to finish your degree at a four-year university. This seems to have just a really different feel in a lot of ways to it than what I think we've traditionally thought of as a community college.
Right, and community colleges have really changed from that, you know, jumping off point mm-hmm. to a four-year degree. It's more now career readiness and getting a certificate or getting a degree where you can go get a job. And, you know, they've grown from zero students to 35,000 students. And they, you know, the discussion that they had on Tuesday said, well, are we trying to be everything to everybody? Whereas should we be picking a niche and going with that and engaging the community and seeing where the community feels CWI should be?
Hmm.
It's been such a success story, right?
Right.
I mean, they've done a lot with limited funds, and so I think at some point they've done such a good job and expanded so quickly, and now they're at the point where people are ready to see what's coming next and aren't persuaded they actually know what's coming next.
Scott, I want to end quickly on two Idaho employees being detained in China, because there hasn't been a lot of info on this. Because this happened last month, correct?
Yeah, right. This is two employees of a company called China Horizons. This is a company based in Rexburg, Idaho. And it's a company that gives college students the opportunity to visit China and teach English as a second language to native Chinese speakers. And the founder, Jacob Harlan, and the director of the company, Alyssa Peterson, apparently are being held in jail. Well, Alyssa Peterson is being held in jail. Jacob Harlan apparently is being held in a hotel room. They're accused of illegally moving people across borders. Now, that's really all the information we have. And in fact, Alyssa Peterson's family only found out about this because they said, gee, we haven't heard from her in a while. She hasn't called. We should check up on her. And they called and said, oh, yeah, she's in jail.
Oh.
And, you know.
That's something you always want to hear.
Yeah, right. It's your worst nightmare.
Right.
And you just have to wonder if there are political overtones to this, given the political fighting between China and the United States right now. This also has shades of the situation in Haiti. Some of you may remember that Laura Silsby and eight church members were down in Haiti, and they were accused of the same thing, trafficking children, you know, to set up an orphanage for them. But it's a very sensitive international situation when you're getting involved in another country's laws, and particularly with China, which does not have the greatest track record for human rights. You know, it's just it's a scary kind of situation, and it's just kind of now coming out just this week.
Well, and that's the thing, is I think is being able to know about it now and talk about it so people become aware.
Right. And you think about, I think about our court system. You know, the reason that we have an open court system is for the protection of the accused, really. And this is a prime example of, you know, the Chinese government is not releasing any information or details of the charges. And so these folks are just sitting there held captive in a foreign country.
I want to thank all of you for coming in today for the Friday Reporter Roundtable. Appreciate your time. Our guests, Bill Manny with Idaho Public Television, Madeline Beck with the Mountain West News Bureau, and Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Statesman. Always good to have you guys here.
Thank you.
Up next, we are going to chat with the new executive director of Boise's Morrison Center for the Performing Arts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters.